You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing. Clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Funny about this is that Josefina, I came up conceptually when I was in college. So this was before the celebrity boom where every celebrity had a tequila brand. This was way before that. Obviously, as a college student, like many college students, I was just broken trying to get out of unpaid internships. Yeah. But for me, it was very layered. I think in 2020, obviously, we had the death of George Floyd. I think that woke up a lot of brands. It also woke up a lot of consumers. And so when it came to the consumer perspective, I really was like, you know what? I'm so happy everyone's like, I'm Black and I'm proud, because I too am Black and I'm proud. But why is it that we're not talking about the duality of these Black experiences or Black identities, right? When it comes to Black ownership, I think Black Hispanic people are usually not a part of those conversations, primarily because I don't think people truly understand that it exists, right? I think this idea that you can be Black and Hispanic, people still struggle to conceptualize. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. So it's like we're having conversations about Black ownership, but do I get to participate in these conversations? I don't know. Okay. That's one thing from a consumer perspective.
Hey, Style Crew, as promised, we are back continuing our Black Business Month episodes. And this is an industry that I am not familiar with, so I'm very excited to talk to our special guest. We have Catherine Tinsley here with us of Josefina Tequila. I am definitely a tequila girl, but as far as enjoying tequila on a night with girlfriends, that's the extent of my knowledge. So I'm very excited to have her here to represent her brand, tell us about her journey, how important, how she's carrying on her heritage and establishing legacy. And we're going to jump into all the things. First, I'm going to jump into her bio. Catherine Tinsley is a writer, editor, and the founder of Josefina, a tequila brand named in honor of her late grandmother and rooted in sustainability, cultural pride, and radical transparency. A proud Black Puerto Rican woman from the South Side of Chicago, Catherine's work has been featured in publications like Refinery 29, Unbothered, Grazia USA, OK Magazine, and Good Housekeeping, where she's told stories at the intersection of identity, culture, and empowerment. Catherine launched Josefina to fill a void in the spirits industry, one that too often excludes Black and Hispanic founders, and to create a brand that celebrates legacy and luxury without compromise. As a solo founder and graduate student, she's determined to shift the narrative of ownership and build a company her community can be proud of. Well, you have an extensive resume, and I'm excited to dive in and talk to you more about Josefina Tequila. So welcome.
I'm happy to be here.
And okay, so I want to kick off the conversation around what motivated you to pursue entrepreneurship within the spirits industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, entrepreneurship was always going to happen. Mm-hmm. When it comes to my own background, my mom had her own consulting firm when I was growing up. My dad had his own private practice. And I come from a long line on my dad's side of entrepreneurs. My granddad owned a rib shack here in Chicago. So entrepreneurship was all I saw or knew. I didn't really see many adults who had to work for other people. So this was always my path. When it comes to spirits, though, I always tell people, if you're familiar with Chicago, Benny's is a huge liquor store here. And I, like a lot of people, turned 21 in a global pandemic. And so as a byproduct of that, I learned about liquor and alcohol and the comfort of my home and through YouTube videos and TikTok, rather than learning about it in the club or a bar per se, right? Which I think millennials got to have those experiences. Gen Z did not. Yeah. And so going to Benny's with a mask on with my mom and just asking a lot of questions in the tequila aisle, because I had fallen in love with tequila. I knew that my body had reacted differently to tequila versus a wine versus a champagne. I'm not really a fan of either versus a beer. I love tequila. I'm not a big fan of all the other things. And so I'm someone who hyperfixates. So as a consumer, I'm like, oh, like, I wonder if this is on the market. And I just had a lot of questions about sustainability. I had questions about ownership. I had questions about production. I had questions about who is manufacturing things. And that really birthed this founder journey for Josefina. While simultaneously, I'm going through grief for the first time. My grandmother passed my freshman year of college. And I had so much regret because I feel like I never got to say goodbye. You know, my mom and my grandma had this huge fight and it became this whole schism. And then she passes and it's like, we lost so much time that could have been spent, you know, saying goodbye, building more memories while we had her. And so I'm dealing with that while also maturing and also becoming a consumer and also like finally having my own money to spend. And that really birthed Josefina.
You said a mouthful. So I want to first and foremost, I want to offer my condolences. I imagine it was perhaps a few years ago, but I still want to offer my condolences because the grief and missing, it never goes anywhere. So I just want to offer that for the loss of your grandmother, especially because the brand is named after her.
Yeah.
So I want to say that. And then the other thing I wanted to acknowledge, you recognize that your body responded differently to different spirits. Can you tell us more about what your experience was like with understanding that? Because, and the reason I want to dive into this, I imagine that we have listeners that have similar reactions and may just think, like, they may wake up the next morning and think, oh, it's just a typical hangover, or, oh, I'm just bloated. Like, and that may not be the case. Their body may actually be rejecting something that's in these spirits.
Yeah. I mean, so for me, there's a diversity of conversations, and I want to preface with saying, like, this is my perspective as a consumer and a drinker, not as a medical professional, just because I do know people will get very upset if I say anything and I'm not a doctor. But for me, it's like, first you have to think about, like, how much sugar is in what you're drinking, right? Yeah. In your cocktails, in your rum, in your wine, et cetera. So there's a lot of sugar consumption that you are taking in and putting into your body. Then you have to think about, you know, with wine, there's sulfites. With, you know, with most tequilas on the market, about 70% of tequilas now, for the most part on the market, have additives in them. Additives are very common. There's also the fact that a lot of tequilas on the market might not be purely tequila. I mean, there's a class action lawsuit right now against a pretty big manufacturer alleging that they use tequila mixed with other alcohols. Okay. So a lot of consumers, for the most part, don't really know what they are drinking or what's in any other alcohol, whether that is wine, whether that's tequila, whether that's rum. There's not as much knowledge about what you're drinking in the bottle that you're purchasing. For me, when it came to wine, I wanted to love wine so badly. You know, I had a girlfriend from college. Her mom was a CFO of a winery in Santa Barbara. And, you know, they took us to a wine class and you're on the ocean. It's very fabulous. I didn't like one thing I drank. I woke up with the worst headache. I'm bloated. I'm like, I don't really like this. I don't like how it tastes. I don't like how it makes me feel. I don't think this is for me. I drink champagne and I just feel bloated and like I have to burp all the time. It's like, well, I don't really like this either. And so trial and error, right? Because I'm young. I'm still young. I'm only 26. And for whatever reason, I didn't have that reaction with tequila. I didn't have the migraines. I didn't have a hangover. I didn't feel sick. I didn't feel bloated. At the same time, I also recognized not all tequilas were made the same. I got introduced to tequila through friends of mine. I mean, growing up in Chicago, it's a very heavily Mexican city and population. So I had friends who were from the Jalisco region who introduced me to tequila at a younger age, probably younger than I should have. And so I was learning after the fact, after being introduced to it through friends of mine and people where it was more familial and communal, having tequila-based drinks out and about and not really knowing what was in my tequila, that not all tequila was made the same. And so that really sparked even more curiosity about, you know, additives, you know, tequila versus a mixto, and just more questions from a consumer perspective as someone who grew up maybe in proximity to a culture, but not necessarily within a culture.
Okay. And so with you just making that description for us, this actually leads me to another question that I was going to ask later in the episode, but it just makes sense to segue now. So for those of us who have limited tequila to just simply being either a party drink or just having it casually during a happy hour with girlfriends, what would you want them to understand about the heritage of tequila?
Yeah, I mean, this is a traditionally Mexican drink, and I always want to keep that at the focal point of my conversations. I want it to be appreciation and not appropriation. Yeah. So I always want to, you know, preface it with that. Aside from that, you know, tequila really is there's craftsmanship behind it. I think because so many consumers don't really know much about tequila and the artistry behind it, you know, they buy whatever is the cheapest in the liquor store and they have a good time. Mm-hmm. There's something very beautiful and layered and there's an art to tequila, I think, making production as well as drinking it and even making cocktails with it. And so I would suggest, you know, doing your research, having those questions, and then going to a bar, asking the bartender what's their favorite tequila. I think bartenders are the best liquor influencers around. Yeah. And sipping it slowly, you know, taking your time to really think about the flavor profile, the palate. What are you tasting? What are the layers you're tasting? You know, what is something you might notice the first sip versus the second sip? I think that there's a really beautiful experience with sipping tequila that I think a lot of consumers might be missing out on because they're just taking a shot, throwing it back, and going on with the day.
Yeah. I've been guilty of that. I'll go ahead and raise my hand and just be like, I've been guilty of that. Because normally when I order, so I do want to say I'm not like a sugary cocktail girl. That's not my vibe.
Not mine either.
If I do have a cocktail when I go out, I'll normally order a dirty vodka martini or I'll have a glass of wine, or I'll ask the waiter based on their selection, which cocktail do you recommend that has like the least amount of sweetener? Because I just don't care for it. But with that being said, when I do consume tequila, it's normally within a cocktail or I'm taking shots. So now I'm having a reflection and I'm like, okay, Jess, you can actually just sip this. And
I mean, if you want my favorite cocktails, if you want like a low sugar tequila cocktail.
Yes. Yeah, I do. Mean, like, so I'll order a margarita made with like agave and a splash of lemon. The lighter the margarita for me, I don't care for like the green. Those are like the ones that from my experience, they tend to be like really sugary. Yeah. And that I don't prefer. But you're the expert. I'm open to all the tips. I welcome all the tips.
I'm a student. I know a little bit more than some, but I'm you know, I'm not on my PhD
you
yet.
You know a
I'm
lot.
But
you know a lot. Yes.
I think for me, okay, so when it comes to tequila, I really like a good reposado on ice with fresh lime. I think that's always going to be really yummy. Ooh. Especially because reposado takes a while to age. There's a process to it. So I really enjoy reposado on ice. I'm like, I can't wait for ours to finally be on shelves so people can drink it. And then when it comes to the Blanco, which I think a lot of people are probably going to go toward a white tequila and a Blanco, I think that just that's just way more popular.
Yeah.
I think ice, coconut water, Blanco, fresh lime juice, delicious. You know, and the coconut water adds electrolytes. Very simple cocktail. It impresses so many people. It's very easy to make. So I would do coconut water, lime juice, Blanco tequila. If you want it to be bubbly, you can add a little bit of seltzer water. Another good one is ranch water. Blanco, Topo Chico, fresh lime juice. Perfect. Okay. So there's a lot of, or classic tequila soda with lime. There's a lot of very simple, low sugar cocktails that you can incorporate with tequila. I also think when you have a better quality tequila, the flavor itself is, I really enjoy. I'm biased, obviously, but just fresh ice, lime, or even like a little citrus peel is very delicious.
Okay. I love all of this. And you gave me so many options because I'm headed out of town for a work trip tomorrow. Okay. And, you know, when you go on work trips, it's normally like you have the dinner in the evening and a cocktail because we're going to have long days. And you just gave me an option to have like a low sugar drink because I'm not going to be able to work out as frequently this week. So, okay, perfect.
Yeah, and most bars will know about ranch water or tequila soda with lime. So they're pretty easy to order while you're out also.
See, this conversation is so necessary. Okay, so take us back to the education as well as the motivation factor. So talk to me, like, you're going through this process. You're going to the liquor store. You said his name is Benny's?
Yes, it's a very, like, Chicago? Popular liquor chain here in Chicago. Liquor store? Yeah.
So you're going to Benny's. You're having these conversations, being inquisitive. What was the moment where you started to be inspired and say, okay, I'm seeing a gap here in the market. This is something that I need to pursue.
Yeah. So I think this is very layered and I want to make sure I'm not too wordy because I'll talk for forever. But for me, I feel like
you can talk. This is, first of all, I want to say this is your platform. Like I told you on our pre-recording call, I don't cap the conversations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is your time to tell your story because your story is important.
Thank you.
You have.
I think for me, what's so funny about this is that Josefina and I came up conceptually when I was in college. So this was before the celebrity boom where every celebrity had a tequila brand. This was way before that. Obviously, as a college student, like many college students, I was just broken trying to get out of unpaid internships. Yeah. But for me, it was very layered. I think in 2020, obviously, we had the death of George Floyd. I think that woke up a lot of brands. It also woke up a lot of consumers. And so when it came to the consumer perspective, I really was like, you know what? I'm so happy everyone's like, I'm Black and I'm proud, because I too am I'm Black and I'm proud. But why is it that we're not talking about the duality of these Black experiences or Black identities, right? When it comes to Black ownership, I think Black Hispanic people are usually not a part of those conversations, primarily because I don't think people truly understand that it exists, right? I think this idea that you can be Black and Hispanic, people still struggle to conceptualize. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. So it's like we're having conversations about Black ownership, but do I get to participate in these conversations? I don't know. So that's one thing from a consumer perspective where I'm like, I want to see a Black Hispanic owned brand. I can't find one. Then it comes down to this living in New York. New York's not the cleanest. Going from a city like Chicago that is so clean to going to a city like New York, drastically different. And seeing just, okay, there's glass bottles every time I go out, every time I'm leaving a club, there's glass on the background, and thinking about what is the material of this, you know, glass doesn't decompose as easily. How many of these glass bottles are we producing just for them to be thrown on the ground in the streets of New York? So that was kind of a thought I was having, just living my life through New York, Chicago, et cetera. And then obviously spending a lot of time just in Benny's. I mean, I think with the pandemic, I think we were all trying to feel as normal as possible.
Yes.
And I think because I'm in my childhood home with my mom, quarantined, I can't spend time with my friends. So a lot of the activities was just going to the store, right? Because that's the only real socialization you could have. So Vinny's trips became our outing for the week because we didn't really have anywhere we could go or hang out. Yeah. And all of those thoughts kind of were coexisting at the same time as I'm maturing as a consumer. And I think that just kind of birthed it all. I don't know if that answers the question properly.
No. No, it answers it perfectly. And I think it's important that you didn't skip any parts and you shared every aspect of that. What I want to segue into is that we discussed it briefly in your bio, but that the brand is named after your grandmother. And I can imagine that you all had a very close relationship prior to her passing. So talk to me about the importance of including her name within the brand and what sparked that for you.
Yeah, I think for me, my grandma's really the only grandparent I got to grow up with. My mom's biological father, I've never met. I don't even know what he looks like. Like if I saw him on the street, I couldn't tell you that that was my relative. And then my mom's stepdad, who I grew up with, grandpa, passed when I was 3. And then my dad's parents passed when I was maybe like 8 or 9, but I didn't spend much time with them, despite the fact that they lived in Chicago. My grandma, my mom's mom, she would come from Ohio to Chicago to spend time with us. She then moved to Chicago. She lived in our home. Like I gave up my bedroom so my grandma could move in and she could take my bedroom. And I moved into the attic. I'm still stuck in the attic to this day. But like, so that was our relationship. And, you know, I always say this because I do think when it comes to honoring your ancestors, you have to also deal with your family's discomfort with doing that. And I always say your ancestors do not need to be perfect to be honored, right? Like their sacrifices, their lived experiences, their trauma put you in a position to not endure those things. And that does not erase maybe the complexities of those relationships, right? Like I said before, like my mom and grandma had this huge fight, right? Like we didn't get to say goodbye over this, you know, argument. That's a very real thing, and that's very unfortunate. But at the same time, this is the woman who taught me about style, about fashion, who taught me about, you know, why shouldn't I deserve to have luxury goods? I mean, she would go to Neiman Marcus on a Wednesday and walk out with Louis Vuitton luggage because she felt like she deserved it. And that kind of audacity, that boldness, that love for fashion magazines, I got from her. And, you know, when she lived with us, I'd come home from school, I would just crawl on the bed with her and I would hear her stories. And I'm probably the only person in my family who knows the most about her because after school, that was my activity. You know, I was really a lonely teenager. I didn't really have any friends. So I would come home, my sister would be out with her friends and I would be with my grandma listening to her stories or with my mom hanging out with her. So I think that for me, there are so many aspects of who I am as a woman that I obviously get from my mother. But I also think there's many passions I have as a woman that I get from my grandmother. And I'm so blessed that I grew up in a generation where I am afforded so much many opportunities that I can take all the lessons she learned and all the lessons my mother learned and build upon them and build the things that they couldn't build in their generation.
You said something really profound in terms of that our ancestors didn't need to be perfect to have to be honored. What helped you come to that realization?
I think it's just, it's the frustration of how I think people handle death very differently.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I think losing my grandmother is the first time I've experienced grief because my other grandparents, they weren't a part of my day-to-day life. So I can't really grieve people that either I was too young to remember or I didn't spend enough time with for me to be impacted. Like my grandma lived in the house with me. So this was someone who was a part of my identity and my molding. Mm-hmm. And I think losing her was very painful because it's like, oh, I'm going to graduate college and she can't see that. I'm going to get married someday. Hopefully God's will. She won't be able to see that. And so I think that was a very complex experience of dealing with grief for the first time. But you also have to hold space for the fact that this is someone who had different relationships with different people that you also love.
Mm-hmm.
And they might not be processing grief in the same way you're processing it. And so that stance kind of came out of a response to how everyone was feeling. It's like, I get how you feel, right? Everyone's entitled to how they feel. Everyone's relationship is their own. But we have to also give grace to our ancestors. I think as Black and Brown people, I don't think it is healthy for us to recognize the world that we are navigating, even in this current climate. How that molded our parents, our grandparents, et cetera, and then not extend them grace, especially when they're no longer here to defend themselves or tell their stories.
I couldn't agree more. I cannot agree more. Something else that I wanted to give you the opportunity to expand upon, because I think it's important if you're okay discussing it. You mentioned that in your journey with deciding that you wanted to pursue creating your company within the spirits industry, that there's this chasm with people not understanding that you can be Black as well as Hispanic. Can you expand on that, and why do you think that still exists? And then if you have any offerings to how we can fill that gap or begin to?
I think it's a multitude of things. I think in the U.S. specifically, and then we'll go into like how like novellas are filmed and who gets to be in a novella, who gets to be the star of a novella. But in the U.S., Hispanic is marketed to the general public with a very specific look. And if you do not have that very specific look, you are oftentimes not allowed to represent being Hispanic or Latino, right? Even the fact that most people do not know that Haitians are also Latino is a byproduct of how these conversations are represented and sold to the masses. So I think for most people, when they hear about Puerto Rican, they most likely think of Jennifer Lopez. I clearly do not look like Jennifer Lopez. My family does not look like Jennifer Lopez. But they perceive that to be the entirety of an identity. I think that the beauty of Black representation, although I think it needs to expand, is that people know light skin, dark skin, biracial, all of that exist. People don't necessarily see that Hispanic is not a race as far as how it is marketed to people. So when it comes to how you see what it means to be Hispanic or what it means to be Latino, it's not marketed in a way that is encompassing the diversity of that umbrella, because it is not in its actuality a race. So I think that's one thing. I think you also have the fact that within Latin America, and I can speak for at least the Caribbean and, you know, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Cuba, et cetera, race is also constructed differently, because race is a social construct, right? Like, this is not a scientific thing. So in the United States, you grew up with the one drop rule. So if you had one drop of Black, you are Black. That's not really how race was constructed in Latin America. And at least, like, I know in Puerto Rico, like, if you could prove that you had a white ancestor, you were actually able to get freedom. So it was not constructed in the same way. You also had, like, Mejora la Raza, where you essentially are breeding out the Black and Indigenous features and, like, just keep marrying white until you don't have those features in your family anymore. So there's the reality of, like, anti-Blackness in these countries. You have a lot of people who've also been socialized to perceive Black as African-American, who then come to the U.S. and might present as Black, but won't identify with it socially or politically or culturally. And so maybe the interactions with someone who might be phenotypically Black but not identify as Black, now you've now put all of these people into a stereotype of the I know Black, right? Which is such a common joke people make about Dominicans. And it's so messed up, because there are so many Dominicans who are proudly Black and who are actively doing the work and actively fighting to advance Black people throughout across the diaspora. And the idea that Dominicans inherently reject their Blackness doesn't make space for the complexity of these conversations. But I do think it's very layered. I think there's first the fact that people see Hispanic as a race. So they don't see Black Hispanic people on their television screens or their magazines. And when there are Black Hispanic people, they do not play Hispanic roles. Like when it comes to Zoe Saldana, Christina Milian, Gina Torres, they're oftentimes taking roles that are supposed to be African-American roles. And so when it comes to representing Latinidad, these women, while they are unapologetically Latino, they don't necessarily get to take roles, or they're not offered roles that really capture their own identities. So I think it's represented in a way that is very whitewashed. On the flip side of that, I think there's a lot of conversations about who gets to be Black, what is Blackness, and how do people that are coming from a different cultural identity fit into that conversation. And then you also have the I know Black jokes, where then people think, a lot of people think Black means African-American. And so they think that people who are non-African-American are simultaneously not Black, which that's not reality.
Yeah.
If they weren't Black, they would be treated as people who had the privileges of not being Black, and mm-hmm. their realities in these countries is proof that they are perceived as Black people.
Okay. You just broke it down. So what I want to ask you is, what are some ways that we can begin to shift or try to shift perspectives?
I think it's, listen, I mean, my dad says this all the time, and it's true. We are all ignorant of something. And mm-hmm. this idea that we are all universally in the know is not helping anybody, right? The reality is we don't all know everything. We don't know every identity. We don't know every lived experience. So I think conversations, engaging mm-hmm. in conversations, not jumping to conclusions or assumptions, mm-hmm. making space for the fact that the history of someone's country that they're coming from, the cultural identity that they experience, is different from the United States, but they're now navigating life in the U.S. I think Tyla is the perfect example of Tyla identifies as South African colored, which that is a racial slur in this country, and navigating the American racial construction while coming from a country that's also very heavily racially constructed, but very differently mm-hmm. than ours, and how that works for you. And I think that the conversation has to hold weight for some level of nuance. Mm-hmm. Conversation also has to, I think, prioritize community. Mm-hmm. I do know my parents decided to have a kid at 40. So mm-hmm. I grew up with parents who grew up with the civil rights movement and the second wave of feminism mm-hmm. and, you know, protesting the Vietnam War, and all these social movements were happening during their own evolution as people, that mm-hmm. I grew up with Pan-Africanism. So it wasn't really till adulthood where I realized so many people are dividing Black people by ethnicity, because, mm-hmm. you know, where I grew up and the age of my parents I grew up with, these weren't conversations I really had to think about until adulthood, where I realized, I'm like, oh, like, people don't realize that Black is more than just one thing.
Okay. Sorry. This is important. Can you hear my dog snoring in the back?
No.
Okay. Style Crew, remember when I told you that we had some new sponsors for this season? Well, I cannot wait to tell you more about one of our newest sponsors, Brit's Body Butter. I am actually holding some of her fragrance oils, which are my favorite products from her. And my favorite fragrance that I wear on repeat, and I constantly get compliments when I wear it, is the Amber Vanilla. So I am a vanilla girly. I wear this fragrance throughout the year, but I wear it in different combinations to be appropriate for the season. And I love layering my fragrances. I first came about her products at an event here in Atlanta. She was one of the pop-up vendors, and I instantly fell in love. I purchased the Amber Vanilla, the...
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
The Summer's Love and the Strawberry Passion. And as you can see, I have been using them all pretty frequently, but mostly the Amber Vanilla. And how I like to use this product is I will spray it on my pulse spots. So behind both of my ears, I'll spray it at the nape of my neck, in front of my neck, in between on my chest, as well as the crease of my arm, as well as right at the beginning of my underarm. Because as the night goes on, you might start to sweat. You want to make sure you're smelling great. And this product really helps aid with that. And then I'll follow it up by topping it with my fragrance choice of the evening, whichever perfume I choose to wear. I find that this fragrance, particularly the Amber Vanilla, pairs really well with a variety of perfumes. And so after I apply the perfume on top of the oil, which would be on my pulse spots, then I'll follow up with a body mist, spray it throughout my hair, all over my body, on my clothing. And then I'm good to step out the door and get all of the compliments of, oh, you smell so great. And one of the other things that I love about this product, you know that I love supporting small-owned businesses. And this is another Black woman-owned business, and they are completely integral in their process. You can get in touch with someone easily, and I just can't recommend them enough. I can't tell you how much I love the products, and I always get compliments. Just to tell you a little bit more about Brit's Body Butter. At Brit's Body Butter and Oils, we believe that beauty goes beyond the surface. True beauty comes from within and is reflected in how we treat ourselves, others, and the planet. Our philosophy is rooted in mindfulness, positivity, and sustainability. Experience the pure, lasting hydration of Brit's Body Butter and Oils. Your skin will be sure to thank you. And so for the listeners, you know I have a code for you. The code is Styled by Jess. That is STYLEDBYJESS. And this will get you 15% off of your purchase price. So don't think about it. Go ahead and run to britsbodybutter.com. That is spelled BRITTSBODYBUTTER.com. And be sure to use the code Styled by Jess, STYLEDBYJESS, for 15% off your purchase. And with that, let's get back into this episode. Okay, so with that, all of that being said, what type of influence has that had on you as a woman, as a human being, and just how you choose to move through the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's complex because I think, you know, womanhood is its own thing. And then when you add being a Black woman, it is also its own thing. Because these are all constructions. And so you have to think about, okay, how do I identify as a human? How do I identify as a person? How do I identify as a woman? How do I identify with femininity? And then how are those things defined in the world that I am navigating?
Yeah.
And, you know, I had this conversation with one of my close friends the other day, and I was just like, it's very fascinating when we're talking about the binary of gender and what it means to be a woman, because how it's marketed to all of us centers white women. And it centers whiteness and white femininity and the fragility of that. And it doesn't necessarily make space for how you and I might navigate the world.
Right.
And that doesn't necessarily mean we aren't women. That doesn't mean that we aren't feminine. It's just it is presented to us in a way that we are never going to design. We're never going to be designed to fit.
Yeah.
And so I think really acknowledging that how these constructions are presented to us in a society that doesn't necessarily center us.
Yeah.
And then having your own definition of how you perceive yourself, how you identify with yourself, how you define those things for yourself, and allowing that to coexist with the reality of the world we live in, I think is kind of crucial.
I appreciate everything that you shared, as well as the education on it, because just to be transparent, these are certain topics in terms of being Black as well as being Hispanic that I am very ignorant to. And I just appreciate your willingness to share it with us and just share your heart and your story, because I think that's one way that we can begin to move the needle, as well as people's willingness to be curious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I think not getting angry at people asking questions. I mean, obviously, if someone's disrespectful,
yeah,
that is one thing. But I think taking offense to curiosity, I don't think is going to move the needle further either, right?
Yeah.
I get asked all the time, what ethnicity are you? Which parent is white, you know?
Yeah.
I know why people think the way that they think, right? I'm not going to sit here and pop off at them or yell at them or get offended. I understand why they think someone who looks the way I look has a white parent. I understand why they're asking me, what are you mixed with? And while it might be annoying to have to ask it regularly, especially when you're coming up in school, it's like, okay, you guys ask me this every year. Like, we've been in school together for a while.
Right.
But the reality is,
the answer's not changing.
Yeah. I'm same parents the whole time. But I think being open to dialogue, I think, is the only way we're going to improve, even detached from Blackness. I think as a country, if we are not willing to engage in conversations that are uncomfortable, we are not going to get far. And I think the reality of people being in refusal to engage in discourse, obviously, again, I'm not talking about anything disrespectful. But if it's just someone asking, you know, what does it mean to be a woman for you? What does it mean to be Black to you? What does it mean to you know, be a part of Latinidad but not be represented by it, right? Those very deep questions that I think center you as a being, I think shouldn't be off the table for conversation. Because if we don't engage in these types of conversations, we're not really building community, we're not building bridges, and we're not really moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. Yeah, I'm excited to hear the response and the openness to this conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so I am connected with you on LinkedIn. That's how I came about you, as well as your story. And I've been following your journey to raise funds and now allow investors for your business. Can you walk us through that process, how that's going, and just break down anything that you feel is important for the listeners to know?
Yeah. For starters, fundraising is hard. Like, just to put it out the way, like, it's hard.
Yeah.
I also think what's really hard, I actually made a TikTok about this, is, you know, I went to Sarah Lawrence, which when I went to Sarah Lawrence, it was the second most expensive college in America. I did not pay full price for that degree that's right behind me. That's not right. Like, I wasn't paying 80 grand a year for a school. No, could not afford that. Mm-hmm. But I think being in a school like that brings you in proximity to a lot of wealth. And, you know, you're living in Westchester, so you're in proximity to a lot of wealth. Mm-hmm. As a byproduct of that, even though I'm a Black woman, a lot of the people in the spaces I navigate assume I am from the same level of wealth that they are of. I am not. I'm not in proximity to that wealth in my day-to-day life. I am not of wealth. I did not grow up wealthy. I had middle-class upbringing. As a byproduct of that, though, I get a lot of people who I know through the network of going to school at Sarah Lawrence will be like, you should raise your first 50 to 100K through the friends and family round. And, you know, I always, you know, my dad's family's from the South. I try to always be very polite. And I'm just like, oh, okay, because I don't want to come off like rude or disrespectful. Yeah. But I just want to scream inside because I'm like, Black people did not have that money. Like, we did not have that money. Hispanic people did not have that money. The racial wealth gap is so vast in this country. Like, I think I made a TikTok and I was like, I think the annual, I'll get the exact numbers, but the like house average white household wealth in this country was over $200,000 in the study. Black household was a little like 44,000, a little below 45,000, and the Hispanic household and was, I think, a little less than 70K. That is a drastic difference, right?
Yeah.
And so for founders like myself and founders who look like me, we don't have 50 to 100K on our block. Like, if the block had it, we'd get it, right?
Yeah.
I think our communities are very rich in wisdom and support and love and comfort, and that is beautiful. But that is not necessarily what's going to finance a business. It's going to keep us afloat emotionally, spiritually, mentally, but it's not going to finance a business. And so for a lot of Black founders, they get advice from people who don't understand, I think, the racial wealth gap. And they're like, just raise amongst your friends and family. They don't statistically and even in reality don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Even for Black people who are Black professionals, the student loan debt crisis and how much many of us are in student loan debt in order to get those high paying jobs also don't have that capital, right? They have enough to maybe own a home and a car, but that's the extent of the income, right? So I think that is first one thing that I think is very fascinating is the lack of understanding of the racial wealth gap and how that colors fundraising. Because I think a lot of people who don't look like me can just raise amongst their neighbors and raise amongst their friends and family. I don't necessarily have that privilege, contrary to what people might think. I don't come from money. So that's one thing. Second thing is when you are fundraising and doing it publicly, you know, I understand what comes with choosing to do things with a forward-facing profile, right? I take that risk and sacrifice, and I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But you get a lot of entitlement, right? So you get questions about what your parents make, how much you make, why. There's a lot of entitlement. You would be shocked how many people feel entitled about every detail about you just to give you $10. So that's something that also, like, you have to really be able to set boundaries with people. Especially because, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're not actually going to give you the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want to know a lot of intimate details about me and my life for you to give me a check when these are not details about my business or what I'm building. It's about me. So I think that is second thing where, you know, setting boundaries, obviously politely and respectfully, and try to center what you're building and not yourself.
Mm-hmm.
because this is very purpose-led. And I know that as the founder, because we've not hit shelves yet, I know a lot of people are really investing in me as a founder, mm-hmm. but you know, making sure not to be so inappropriate with potential investors, I think, is the second thing. The third thing is when it comes to fundraising, aside from friends and family, Black people also receive the least amount of VC funding. So it's a lot more difficult for us to, A, get in front of a VC, but B, also receive a check from a VC. You know, we're oftentimes told, you know, come back in 2 years, and the goalpost is always moving. And you're required to be a lot further along overwhelmingly. And this has been my lived experience. And like, I have founders in my network who talk about their fundraising experiences. And it's very similar, where they were told they need to be a lot further along. And then they have counterparts who are not Black, who did not have to be as far along as them. And so it feels like a microaggression. I'm like, maybe you don't believe in me, and that's fine. But if I looked different, would you have the same responses to me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So that's the third thing. And I think the fourth thing is that, you know, crowdfunding, it allows people like me to enter these spaces. But at the same time, it's also difficult, because you have to get people to want to invest in something that might not even be familiar with investing. Mm-hmm. I also think culturally, you know, we tend to be more apprehensive and like reluctant about things like that. I think, you know, in my own personal network, people are like, why are you doing a GoFundMe page? I'm like, it's not GoFundMe, right? I think a lot of people within our community don't fully understand the finance landscape, the investment landscape. And so there's a connotation they have with crowdfunding that is not the reality of crowdfunding. And mm-hmm. so you have to also deal with that, where maybe they have the capital to give, but they don't fully understand what crowdfunding is, so they're not going to give it. Even though they might want to. And so I think those are really all the things. We had a Kickstarter. We didn't meet our goal, but we've pivoted to WeFunder, which actually allows people to invest in Josefina mm-hmm. rather than donate. And so I'm excited to see where that goes. I've learned a lot about this process as a founder. I will also say with WeFunder, their team has been so supportive that it makes this process a lot less stressful, because I actually have a resource where it's a person, mm-hmm. not AI, mm-hmm. that I can schedule regular calls with and meet with. And so, you know, I'm excited. And, you know, by God's grace, we will meet and exceed that goal.
You will.
Yeah.
I'm just going to speak it and manifest that. And I will be linking all of these resources for the listeners where they can participate in your fundraising. So you're doing everything. I mean, you're staying resilient, which I imagine is not easy. So no. So you will, for sure. So in addition to that, I want to ask you, what are some challenges and just some adversity that you have faced as a Black and Hispanic founder in this process?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously like funding is one thing, right? Mm-hmm. But we know that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Get it off the table. We know that's difficult.
Yeah.
I think the biggest things for me is their reactions to me having the audacity to demand the reality of what it costs to scale a business.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Yes. I've been called aggressive. I've been called problematic. I've been called assertive. I've been called bold. I like being called bold.
Yeah.
I'll take this one. Yeah. It is fascinating to me when I get that feedback, and then I'll send it to, you know, friends of mine who, you know, look like us who are in the finance sector. I'm like, is this problematic? And they're like, no, Kat, it's not. Like, this is a good deck. Like, you know what you're doing. Like, you know, I would maybe tweak a few things here and give you some notes here. But they were like, that is a microaggression. Because it's very easy. First of all, as a solo founder, you have to understand that you're going to do things wrong, right? Like, my deck looked horrible when I first made my deck. Then I, you know, hired a business advisor and, like, designed my deck with my business advisor. And now my deck looks beautiful. But there are times where the feedback is legitimate, right? Like I sent my deck out when I first got this concept years ago to a VC firm that was like Latinx owned, and they gave me a list of notes that were so useful, were so helpful, but they were well-intentioned notes, right? You could tell they read through the deck. They took like notes for each page, or like you should ask yourself these questions, right? Those are notes and feedback that I was able to apply and that were and utilize, right? Then you get comments where it feels like it's almost like a character assassination, where it feels inherently personal, right? When you get called aggressive or bold, mm-hmm. right? Also words that are often used to describe Black women all the time.
Yeah.
And so when you're called those things, especially as a Black woman who has navigated spaces where like, I'm the only person of color, let alone Black person, right? Like I'm representing everybody. You get called those things for simply just articulating whatever, right? Because your words are always going to be manipulated by people who are not interested in understanding you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be very triggering, I think, at times when you get told you're aggressive for simply asking for what your peers are also asking for and getting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard to maintain faith if you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are entering, I think, entrepreneurship from a very ego-driven place, best of luck. I am doing this because I feel like God called me to do it and I'm just going to follow him. And obviously I'm going to do the work. I think you got to give him something to bless. Like you can't just be in a corner. But if I didn't have faith, I wouldn't keep doing this. Faith is the sole thing pushing me. Faith is the sole thing that is making me go through this. And faith is the only reason why when I get those comments, I can brush them off. But it is frustrating to hear. And then you also get the questions of, well, people don't want another Black Hispanic-owned tequila brand. I'm like, okay, remove my identity from it. Everyone has a grandmother. Everyone's experienced grief. Consumers also, detached from all of that, deserve to know what they are drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Consumers at a basic level deserve to know what's in the bottles. Consumers at a basic level deserve to be able to see the journey of a founder and a brand and how it got on a shelf. On a very basic level, detached from the history we are potentially making, detached from my own identity, our own brand story, as a product, remove all the other things from it. As a product, consumers deserve to know what is in their bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Consumers deserve to be able to have access to a luxury experience at a reasonable price range. If you say that, right, it shouldn't be that controversial, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's been also very fascinating, as I think because we're in a climate where I think people are very apprehensive about DEI. And as a Black Hispanic woman, I am inherently DEI, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, existence is DEI, right?
Yeah.
And so as a byproduct of that, I think a lot of people are like, well, people don't care about identity. It's like, no, they do. If they didn't, they wouldn't be boycotting Target. They care about identity. It's about how we are engaging with their identity that is turning people off, right? It's not about the fact that they don't care. It's not about the fact that they don't want to support these types of brands. It's how we're talking about these brands, how we're presenting these brands, how we're marketing these brands, how you're putting these brands on the bottom of the shelf. That is what is producing that. It's not really that people don't care. People care quite a lot. Because if they didn't care, the social media traffic that we have already and we haven't hit shelves would not exist.
Mm-hmm. 100%. So with that, I want to ask you, with the challenges that you face, what are the joys that you've encountered as well that have kept you going? I know you mentioned your faith as being a foundation for you, but what are some other things and just other like signs and encounters that you've had in this process that have really given you that push to keep going?
Yeah, I feel like every time I have thought about quitting, like my grandparents have sent me a message. So before, maybe about a little over a year ago, I actually flew out to Guadalajara to go to the manufacturer to really taste what the product would potentially taste like and really see if we'd be aligned potentially. And so I brought my brother with me because there's no one's opinion I probably value more than his. Because we're we have a 17-year age gap. So I value his opinion quite a lot. So we went together. And but the night before our flight, I had an extremely vivid dream. And the only reason I know it was a dream is because I know my grandmother is deceased. That's how vivid it was. Where I walked downstairs from my bedroom to my breakfast nook, and my grandma was downstairs in her purple robe. She had like a purple velvet robe she wore all the time. She was always cold. With her instant coffee, and she smiled at me, and then I woke up. And I was like, well, maybe I'm just like thinking about her, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence. I mean, obviously I'm naming the brand after her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I go to my first like business meeting as like a CEO and founder in Mexico. And I realize I'm going to have to raise significantly more than I thought I was going to have to raise. This is scary. Like, maybe I should just bow out, right? Like, I'm like, maybe I'm like, it's early enough where I can just dip on this dream.
Yeah.
And so my grandpa, who's like my mom's stepdad, but my grandpa, his name was Lázaro. And we're heading back to the airport to our flight from Guadalajara back to Chicago. And I see in huge letters before we get to the airport, Lázaro. Heading to the airport. And I was like, you know what? If that's not a sign, I got to keep going. And if it's not a sign, I'm going to accept it as a sign. but obviously, I can't afford to quit. And so there's little synchronicities. Even like one time, still living in New York, still thinking about whether or not I need to like go to business school. Because I was making a lot of contacts with people in the distribution space. And I noticed they all had MBAs. And I'm thinking about, you know, should I go back to Chicago? Like, you know, New York, everything feels like it's in New York when you live in New York. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, should I really leave? Like, I'm not necessarily happy here. And like, you know, I love working in media, but I really want to position myself to like build Josefina. And like, if I live in New York, I can't afford to build anything but my media career in New York because it's so expensive. And I have this Dominican beauty salon that I love in Bed-Stuy. And I just was like, you know what? I'm anxious. I need to go get my hair done. And the girl behind me says in Spanish, she's doing my rollers. A girl named Josefina, like, just didn't show up, right? And it was the time that the girl had scheduled was, it was like my grandma's birth date or something. Like, it was so random. It's like the time that she had put, like, it had, like, equaled out to her birthday. It was something very strange. And I was just like, okay. Noted. I see you, God. Or like going to a bodega and the only candle left is like a Lázaro candle. We're just very like science synchronicities all around me that like I had to keep going. And now I'm at the point where I'm like, God keeps bringing me this far, so I can't turn around now.
Yeah. I love that. I feel like he definitely speaks to us and sends signs when we're like at our capacity. So I love that. Okay. I want to ask you, what is your favorite way to enjoy your tequila? Because you gave us so many recipes at the top of the hour, but I just have to ask you, like, what is your favorite way? And it doesn't have to be just one way.
Yeah, no. Okay. If I'm out and about, you should always get an espresso martini, but swap it for tequila instead.
Never thought about that.
Yeah. Stop doing the espresso martinis the traditional way. Stop doing with the vodka. Swap it out for tequila. You'll thank me later. Significantly better beverage. Okay. Even when I have girlfriends over, all my friends love espresso martinis. I'll make it for them with tequila instead.
Okay.
Perfect drink. I love reposado on ice with lime. Fresh lime always. I love a ranch water. I also love, if you get fresh watermelon, here in Chicago, like, we buy our watermelon from the Mississippi man. Like, we have a whole cart. Like, it's a whole system. It's very efficient. So we go to the Mississippi waterman. We get our fresh Mississippi watermelon. You're going to take the watermelon fresh, cut it up, put it in the blender, put lime juice, mint, Blanco tequila, blend it, add ice. Perfect summer beverage.
Ooh. And I'm a watermelon girly. I know I'm from Alabama, so I know all about the Mississippi man. Do you do the thump too to make sure it's right? Like when you pick your watermelon?
Wait, what?
Do you do the thump test too when you?
My mom does it all. I just trust. I trust my mother with anything food related.
Just let mama girl. Yeah. You can never go wrong with mama, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to ask you, how do you hope your brand inspires or opens doors for other women of color in business?
That's such a good question. I hope, no matter what race the woman is, I hope women will see Josefina on a shelf and know it's still possible.
Yeah.
I hope that women will see it on the shelf and know, you know, if she can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. Because regardless of race, creed, whatever, like, it's hard out here for all women, right? There are barriers in place against all of us. So I hope women see it and see me putting in the work, see the fact that I am being vulnerable about my founder journey, primarily because I wish I had someone who was that transparent with me, and see that she did it.
Yeah.
It happened. She's doing it while maintaining her femininity. She's doing it while honoring femininity, right? I think my grandma was a very elegant woman. I mean, she had like 10 ear piercings. She could wear all her favorite gold hoops at once. Like, she was just, you know, a different breed of person. But so I think that's one thing, because I do think, as I'm in a conversation with a friend, I'm like, you know, I don't need to reject my femininity to be successful. I don't need to abandon the fact that I am a woman to be successful. I can still be soft. I can still lead. Yes. I can still set boundaries and still have a softness about me. And I'm comfortable with that. I'm okay with that, because pretending like I'm masculine is not going to be fulfilling, right? I don't want to succeed in a way that's going to be unfulfilling to me. So I want women to see that. I B would like women to know that it's okay to be curious, and I think explorative. I think that a big part of how I became a founder is because I am just an inherently curious person. And I think that's the beauty of things. And I think, you know, following your intuition, following where God guides you, following the path that's for you, even if it's bumpy, I think is something that I hope women will take away from Josefina once it's on a shelf and they're sipping on it at home with their watermelon cocktail or their espresso martinis.
You know, I love that you brought up not feeling like you have to assimilate and operate in masculinity to succeed, because I think there are conversations happening where women within corporate spaces can talk about these things and don't feel like they have to.
Yeah.
But I do think that narrative still exists, like, oh, I'm in this male dominated industry or this male dominated office, and I have to be this way to be successful. And I appreciate that you acknowledge that that's not something you're willing to accomplish, to compromise on to be successful. Being bold and being assertive in your ask, yes, those are things that you'll continue to do, but you're not, you have no interest in wasting the gifts that dwell within you, which your femininity is one of them. There's beauty in being a woman and identifying as a woman, and there's things that we can get done as women that men are not able to, because they're in their masculine. And so I appreciate you acknowledging that. And I think that's important.
I mean, I think my best friend and I were literally just having this talk this morning on our way to church. To be a woman is like an inherently spiritual experience.
Yes.
And the way we create, the way we dream, the way we envision, the way we birth, even outside of, you know, becoming a mother, right? The way we birth conceptually, right?
Yes.
Like the way that I was able to conceptualize this and think about it and feel it and feel so tied and connected to it emotionally, spiritually, physically, to birth something conceptually. That is a very beautiful experience. And that is also a power. And while I understand we navigate a patriarchy where our femininity is oftentimes undermined, it is powerful. And, you know, divine femininity is powerful. There's so much strength in that. I think if we are honest about it, we will actually get what we where we need and want to be. Because I do think, you know, there are people who are inherently, you know, women who are inherently masculine and comfortable with masculinity. And I'm not
100% hats off.
But I think if you are a woman who is feminine, right, like even for me, I'm talking about tequila, I'm talking about I like making cocktails to host my girlfriends. Right. Yeah. That is a very different approach to the liquor consumption as well as consumer experience. A lot more people also probably relate to that. And I think that being comfortable with that, I think, is very beautiful.
So I'm going to take a picture and email it to you. I don't know if you've heard of this minister. Her name escapes me, but I have the book right over here on my bookshelf. So there's this like Bible study series that she teaches. It's called The Rib. And it talks about the importance of women being the rib and how the weight that is on us with that role, but also just the beauty within it, everything that you just said. And I actually came about it at a women's conference last year And the sermon itself, I haven't done the Bible study just yet, to be transparent, but I did see the sermon, which is what prompted me to purchase the book. And it was extremely transformative for me in terms of viewing my role within a future household and as a, you know, mother later in life and all those things. So I share that just to say I agree and I resonate with the conversation that you were having with your friend. So I'll email you a photo of it so you can check it out.
I would love that.
Yeah. Okay. Where do you see Josefina in 5 years?
In 5 years? Such a great question. Not just on shelves, but I think for me, this is more than just a product. This is a movement. Mm-hmm. This is an offering. This is an ancestral offering. This is an experience. And I want to feel in community with our consumer base.
Mm-hmm.
And so 5 years from now, we will be on shelves,
mm-hmm.
selling nonstop, but also in community with each other. And to me, Josefina is a cultural bridge. You know, we have our team based in Mexico. We have I'm Puerto Rican by descent. I'm African-American by descent. Grew up on the south side of Chicago. I've lived in New York. I go to Miami often. You know, I want to feel like we are all interconnected. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see that diversity of people really being in community together around Josefina and engaging in really beautiful conversations over a drink. I think in Latin culture, you know, we are known to enjoy a drink or two. And but, you know, when I was growing up, it was always around like family events. We're having dinner. We're having a kickback. We're having a barbecue. And, you know, I hope people get to feel the community that I felt growing up mm-hmm. through this class, but also they get to feel the essence of my grandmother while holding the bottle. I think for me, I was very intentional with the design team based in Guadalajara about, you know, who she was as a person. I just sent them a list of adjectives and a few pictures of her. And I was like, you know, this is her. And like, this is what she wore. And then, you know, these were her favorite Louis Vuitton bags. And this is what she would do when she lived in New York, when she lived in Ohio, when she lived in Western Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And we molded the design around her as a person.
Yeah.
And the perception of her as a woman. And so I also want people to really embody that and that kind of effortless elegance that she had. You know, you don't have to be rich to be elegant. You don't have to be wealthy to have a luxurious experience. And I want people to also feel that when they're purchasing this.
And that's what they're going to have. I can't wait to get my hands on a bottle.
Can't wait for you to have it.
I am excited for this. Okay, so I always close out the podcast by asking my guests one style-related question. And my question for you, it's evident that style is something that's very important to you. And we talked about the socialization of cocktails and having your girlfriends over. So I want to ask you, what is your favorite happy hour ensemble? Like, what does that consist of?
That's a good question. I mean, it depends on where I'm going. Something casual, I always have like my Josefina cap, okay. T-shirt, chain, blue jeans, Air Force Ones. Very casual, you know, bar hopping outfit. If I'm going out, satin dress, hoops, Louis Vuitton Speedy bag, which was also my grandma's. But the Speedy bag, I think, is the best. If you want like an intro to luxury bag, I think the Speedy bag is perfect because it fits so much. You know, as a journalist, oftentimes I have like a camera, a light, a recording device, a tripod, all that fits in that bag. It's perfect. It fits everything. I put shoes in there for when the night's over. Mm-hmm. So that would be my go-to, like a nice black, little black dress, Speedy bag, put flip-flops in there for the end of the night because I know my feet are gonna hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And a sleek bun, hoops, heels, go out on the town.
There you go. And you're ready for a good time.
Absolutely.
Okay. So this is your time. I always close it out by asking my guests to share where we can find you, any upcoming projects or collaborations that you want us to be on the lookout for, all the ways that we can support you in this journey. And all of this will be in the episode bio, but I just want to give you the opportunity to plug away.
Yeah. So if you want to follow my founder journey, my Instagram is at Kat Tinsley, but Kat with a K. So KATTINSLEY. And my TikTok is at Kat Tinsley _. For Josefina, our brand, where you can catch all of our updates, which I also post on my account as well. You can follow us on TikTok and Instagram at Drink Josefina. And then you can also follow along with my founder journey on LinkedIn. It's just Catherine Tinsley. I'm pretty easy to find there. And we also have our WeFunder page, which is how you can actually invest in Josefina. And it is WeFunder.com/Josefina.
I love it. All the things and everything will be linked as promised. Catherine, thank you so much for sharing your story with the world and continuing your grandmother's legacy and being obedient to the vision that was placed on your heart and just pursuing it. And I can't wait to consume your tequila and be a regular customer and see you out popping and look back on this conversation and be like, girl, you said this is where it would be and you surpassed what you thought it would be in 5 years, you know? So I'm excited for that for you.
Me too. Thank you so much for this. This is so amazing.
Of course. All right. And with that, Style Crew, we're out until another episode next week. And just remember to continue to support as we are rooting for everybody Black this month. We will have more Black-owned businesses featured. And that's all. Bye. Hey, Style Crew. Make sure you're keeping up with our podcast through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, as well as the Podcast Index. And if you'd like to view the podcast visually, check out my YouTube channel, Styled by Jessica Lauren.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10/1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.